And good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable. This is Kathy Lauren standing in, backing up Marita this evening, as last minute she just hasn't gotten home quite yet from her travels. So we will do that as we always do. And along with that backup, we have Carolina Rainbird doing the same thing for Angel Sue, who normally joins us for our tune-up to get us started every single Thursday evening. So we welcome you. We thank you. We've got Gene Slater, or is it Slatter? Not sure. I think it might be Slater. Remember the book that she wrote, Hiring the Heavens? We had her on this program. It's been years now, and it will be lovely to be seeing her at the top of the hour at 10 p.m. We'll be bringing her on board. And Marita will be here to join us as soon as she returns from her travels this evening. So in this moment, we will pass that talking stick to our Carolina Rainbird.
Well, thank you, Kathy. I'll take that talking stick. And let's go into that quiet space then, taking a few deep breaths. I like to do a routine of breathing in through my nose and out through my mouth gently. But whatever protocol you like to do, just get in. Day. And I'm going to call the prayer of the seven galactic directions, which is that Mayan prayer. So, with the help of this rattle, it's a Mayan rattle. It has alpacas on it. So here we go. From the Eastern House of Light, may wisdom open in the dawn upon us, so that we might see things clearly. From the Northern House of Night, may wisdom mature among us so that we may see everything from within. From the Western House of Transformation, may wisdom be transformed into right action so that we might accomplish what must be done. From the Southern House of Eternal Sun, may right action give us the harvest, so that we might enjoy the fruits of the planetary being. From the Upper House of Paradise, where the star people and the ancestors gather, may their blessings reach us now. From the lower house of the earth, may the beating of the crystal planet's heart bless us with its harmony so that we might end war. From the central source of the galaxy, which is everywhere at once, may everything be recognized as the light of mutual love. Aho Matakiyasu in Lakesh. And we are all one. When one is harmed, all are harmed. And when one is helped, all are healed. Therefore, in the name of who we are, and we are one with all that, I ask that that which the Creator knows best happen here. And so it is. We give thanks that this is done. Oh. So, let's go to that Mayan calendar. We had a really good week with all portal days coming in together, and the ceremony we did last week was all in the portal days. So, lots of gratitude for those good days of that strong, powerful, multidimensional reality coming on board and assisting us as we do our work. So we are in the wave of Kaban as of Monday, and we don't have a portal day until next Tuesday. So we're settling into an even keel, but I believe we have an eclipse coming with this new moon. So I think we still are in a lot of this intense energy with everything else that's going on. So today is a four, a how. Now let me go back to that wave of Kaban, because this is a good wave to be in right now. And look at these energies that we have with Kaban. We're working with calling to us the memory that we hold of our galactic directive. So we are the center point of perfect balance in the sacredness of all life. We're the keeper of the earth, and we're aware of earth's energy, and we can access this planetary harmony. So work with that balance point. It's our duty to work with our gifts of vision and clairaudience and compassion, compassionate intuition, as we form our gyro. Let's be the earth keeper, the navigator in this wave. And today is a four, a how. A how is the sun. It's the 20th or the zero solar glyph. And that four is that self-existing sacred tone. So a how, moving to Christ consciousness and rising up that way. Thank you, sun, for being in our lives like that. And then, so here, that's the energy for today. And then tomorrow we begin a new unial, which is the name we give for the 20 days in each unit as we go through the 20 glyphs. So this new unial is the ninth one in the matrix. And we start with that 5 Emish, that dragon energy, that mother energy, and that 5 energy of overtone, that harmonic. So that's good energy for tomorrow. Emish speaks to the powerful position of our initiation. So it's a powerful day for creation and working on our self-healing, our self-dependence, and trusting in the universe and our clarity of mind. We're working with the beginnings and the force of creation. So this is a good beginning into the new moon energy. And Tara, I want you to give me the time of the new moon and for sure of the eclipse. If you got that, I don't have any of those times, but I would like to. And then on Saturday, speak and win. And so looking at that energy being a new moon energy is in there somewhere. And that win energy is always, I always like to think about it, listening to the voices of our ancestors, listening to the voices of our guides and guardians.
Okay, Rainbird.
Yeah.
Okay. On Pacific time, it's on the 12th at 11:41 in the evening. And every other time zone, it's on the 13th. So 12:41 Mountain, 1:41 Central, and 2:41 a.m. Eastern, that lunar eclipse, new moon.
Oh, good, good. And it's a lunar eclipse.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Great, thank you, Tara. So there we go. We're doing it with the...
Oh, no. No, sorry, I'm wrong. My eyes are crossed. It is a solar eclipse.
Okay, I was thinking it was a solar eclipse.
Yes.
All right, so the solar eclipse, and does that make it a blood moon also, or is that on a full moon? I think that is. Okay, so Saturday, Sunday, as you can see, depending on your time zone, will be the new moon solar eclipse. And so you're looking at a 6 eat the wind, and that 6, that rhythmic tone. And then on Sunday, it's a 7 Akbal, and Akbal is that night, working in that night energy, which is perfect for a new moon because it's very dark. And so we work with the protection of the night with that magical 7 tone that really allows good work between the dimensions. So Sunday, very powerful weekend with those energies. And on Monday, it's an 8 con, and 8 is that working with our relationships, it's planetary harmony, and with con, that seed energy, that's about timing and self-determination and that seed energy. And on Tuesday, we have another portal day. It's a 9 Qichang. Qichang is that serpent energy, that transformation. And 9 is expansion. So very powerful day, being a portal day. And it's also the 15th, September 15th, that day the UN is going to maybe possibly put right in there without any U.S. veto happening. And that, so it could be a very profound day with those energies like that, of transformation and expanded cycles. So looking forward to that Tuesday energy. And then on Wednesday, a 10 Kimi manifestation with a 10 sacred tone. And Kimi, linker of worlds. So let's manifest heaven on earth on Wednesday. Then when we come back on Thursday, we can let go of what no longer serves us with that 11 tone in the healing solar glyph of Monique, the hand, the deer energy. And so, quite a wonderful week, a lot happening with the eclipse, and that this wave of Kaban, a very special wave, being the navigator of the earth and the earth keeper. So let's dream our dreams awake with these energies. And pass the talking stick, and I'll pass it right back to me. Kathy has requested that I speak a few words about the vision quest that I went to last week.
And yes, where was that? Where did you go? What was it called? People like to know, you know, what some of these things are that are available to them. Share what it was.
Well, how available this was to anybody. Very few people knew about this quest. It was just a small group of us, elders. We're just regrouping after Rocking Bear transitioned, and one of his students in Mexico. He's from around here, but he moved to Mexico and had ran some vision quests there and had a group of people there. And last winter, he moved back up here, and he felt called to do a quest here, and so it was like the first one of this kind of the same group and a way of regrouping with ourselves. And we had two questers that went on the mountain, and they were both from Louisville, Kentucky. They were mother and daughter. One was a veteran quester. It was her fifth quest, and her daughter, who is a writer, decided to quest, and so she was on the mountain in another spot. And what was really interesting about the quest is that both questers were sent down the mountain before the 4 days is up, which is a pretty tough number for the one who's a veteran quester to get her off the mountain. Creator had to pull some tricks. And so it was real interesting that the daughter had to come back off the mountain to receive healing, I believe. But the other one came back off the mountain to for all of us to address a major issue. As when she was on the mountain, there were people that came. And this is a ceremony where you do all these prayer ties. When you go on, you have these prayer ties around a tree, and you make a circle, and you're inside these prayer ties. And these prayer ties basically act as a wall. And no animal would violate that wall. But a two-legged, you don't know what they're going to do. For sure. And the people on the ground are eating and drinking so that these people on the mountain can stay in their place of prayer and not have to think about their physical needs. And so the ground crew is there being a protection and a provider for those on the mountain, but we're also experiencing our own inner quest as we do the work of doing this job of preparing the food and keeping the fire. And keeping the fire is a sacred ceremony in itself as it connects to the crystal grid work of where the questers are and of all the land. And the land we went to was a sacred place. It was called Anacharam, which means a Celtic term for a sacred place. And the Celtic women who had this place kept it in ceremony, in a ceremonial way, so that all the spirits of the land were accustomed to those kinds of relationships with the two-legged. So there was a real palpable difference in that. Previously at Quest, sometimes we would have used festival sites or something like that that always had to be cleared and cleared and cleared and cleared in order to work with the energies. And this is a place that's kept in a sacred way. So you're really, you can walk into this place, you're right, already in another dimension. You don't have to work so hard to get there. But it really feels like it's not really a third-dimensional experience at all. It's a higher-dimensional experience. And we work at those levels. And when the two-legged showed up, I was working perimeter, and I had gotten the message to go back and do some work at the tent. And I was connecting with my teacher, Master Day, and the person on the mountain had also been one of my students and had done 15 levels of Master Dang study, and so I realized that he was part of the picture, and he kept saying protection. And I said, well, you know how to do it. I understand that, and I work the fire, and I work that perimeter, and I put protection in there like I had done it before. And I was curious as to why I was doing that, but I was following my directions from my higher self to build that perimeter higher and stronger and higher and stronger. So I was surprised. All those things happen and you don't ask why, but when she showed up down on the mountain as she came down the next day, I could tell that she was carrying an energy that was different, and she was a day early and something was up. And she said that the two-leggeds had come that night and she wasn't far from the National Road. Exactly where she was, and they were using flashlights. It was two men, two trucks. They're using flashlights, and they never once put their flashlights on her. They're all putting them above in the trees, and so they're good old boys doing something illegal. And so maybe they brought the fear, but she was a strong woman, and she had that Master Dang strength plus her Native American strength, and she was able to take that fear and work with it, and it wasn't her. She said, it was not my fear, but fear showed up. And she worked with that fear, and she came down the next morning, and she wasn't going to do that another night. But as she came down and it was happening, we understood that she came. We could all do the prayers that really brings in the balance between the male and the female, so that a woman no longer has to be afraid of what a man might do. And a man can understand what they do that brings balance into their lives, and to bring balance into the whole picture. And I know that when I got back from the quest, and I just mentioned it to Cheryl, because it was the only thing I wanted to do coming back from the quest was to go on that call, because that was a good way to not to stay in that higher place of prayer. And so I mentioned it to her, and she said, and she just laid out what she was doing Sunday night, and it was just perfect order for what was going on, because what was up was the grief around all of that, and the just just a hyper-awareness of the imbalance of how our lives, have we been taught to be in our lives, and how we need to move into that place of balance and union. And her whole whole meditation program really, it made me feel like I was back in that turtle lodge again, because what happened on the ground was that we all went into the sweat lodge. We call it the turtle lodge. And and when you're in a sweat lodge, that's a ceremony of prayer. It's like going into a church way. It's Mother's Church. It's that turtle lodge, and it's very sacred, and we did our prayers in there with these hot stones and water on those hot stones, and it was extremely powerful, extremely healing, and it took care of the grief, and it brought us all together in a way of working with what was in front of us. And so it was very healing and very profound, very different from any other quest we've ever had.
For the audience's sake, Carolyn, let's just mention, you're not eating that much. You're drinking, but what is your situation? I know you're in a deep, a higher state. So I'm just curious about that, and to give our audience a little feel for what a quest is about. Carolyn? Did we lose you? Okay, BBS, it sounds like we might have lost Carolyn. Can you hear me, Tarim Rama? I'm making sure we have contact here, audio contact. Hello, BBS? We're looking for BBS to respond. Well, I don't hear Carolyn. Did we lose her? Can we reconnect? Okay, thanks, Doug.
Oh, and Doug, I have a call here that says that the conference line's not working.
Okay, thanks, Tara. We'll get that back on board.
I got a call in here from Deanna, and she's calling in the number for the conference call, and she says there's nothing on there. 605-475-2090, right?
Hey.
Okay, there you go, Carolyn. We just
okay,
lost
thank you.
Okay, thanks, Tara. We appreciate that.
I'm going to plug it in to make sure.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Deanna in a long time, but we did lose you for a moment there, Carolyn, so we'll pick that ball right back up. Carolyn? I thought I heard her there for a moment. Okay, we'll just try her one more time. We are pretty much at the back end of the conversation, but I don't like to cut her off like that, if we can just get her back and finish it up. Just one more moment, everybody. And this is the way it goes when you have electronics and people from different places around the country. We've got Carolyn in the mountains of North Carolina. What'd you say, Doug? Are you there, Carolyn? Oh, okay. All right. And thank you for making the effort. We appreciate that. Maybe we could work on the conference call and get that back up and running. Okay, Doug, thank you for doing that in the background. Well, everybody, it seems like it's that kind of a night. Stop, starts, last minute changes. But here we are moving forward. And, I was thinking, Rama and Tara, we're passing the talking stick to you, but I was thinking that, I've needed backup. I've been the backup many times. Carolyn has, Angel Sue has. I don't recall a time in my 11 years where you didn't show up, where you even needed a backup. I do recall a few times where you didn't have a voice, or Rama didn't have a voice, or both of you were struggling with barely a voice, but that's pretty much the only thing I can recall in all these years. So everybody know that we've got our faithful Rama and Tara here to share the hard news, to give us that inner study, that background knowing, those things that you can't get on the news, not even on the alternative news. It's that kind of hard news. And we welcome you and we pass that talking stick to Tara and Rama. Go ahead, Tara.
Hi. Okay, greetings.
Greetings.
What is going on in the world?
Oh, Carolyn's with
Hi.
Us.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay, one moment to hold, Carolyn, as we got you cut off. Thanks for stepping back in. I know you were at the tail end of your conversation, and my question to you was, you know, is there food? You don't really eat. You're in a higher dimensional space and time, and I don't think that's really part of the agenda. But for those who don't know, when you go on a quest, share that piece.
Okay, so what we do is we eat for the people who are questing. And I've quested it. You're never hungry and you're never thirsty. We all eat for the ones who are questing. And so the ones on the ground are always hungry and always drinking. Because you're drinking for someone, you're drinking for others.
Fascinating.
And so in the unifying field, that works out. It's just magical, really.
Yeah. Do you remember where you were when you got cut off?
Oh, I think I was just talking about ceremony and that I was very beautiful and very profound. It was good work, and I feel like it just continued again on Cheryl's call and working for balance between male and female. I feel like the world turned in that, and to, for everyone to hold that thought. Bringing balance into our own masculine, our own feminine.
And I want to thank you on behalf of all of us for the work that you do in these quests, because we all have our place, and you are Mother Earth sitting there on top of a mountain there in North Carolina, and we just love you for that. We thank you for your contribution every week on the Mayan calendar and for standing in for Angel Sue this evening. You're welcome, dear. All right, then. So we were saying, what goes on behind the scenes? How do we know what's going on that the world isn't sharing? We turn to Rama and Tara for those kinds of answers. I pass the talking stick, Tara.
Okay. Musical chairs. Unmute the thing, for heaven's sakes. Greetings, everybody. Okay. Rama,
greetings.
What have you learned today in school?
There are so many things going on. I'm not sure where to begin. What I can say is I spoke with the King of Swords today, and all the things that are going on leading up to 9/11 tomorrow have to do with let's just say, yeah, it's like White Paw in the background howling about the fact that to this day, 14 years later, Darth Vader Dick gets to get on TV, get paid millions of dollars to take up airtime to blatantly lie to the people, while Medea Benjamin gets dragged out and possibly arrested and beaten.
Yeah, this time they don't know.
And
don't know for sure.
Yesterday on the Norman Goldman show, Amy Goodman came on and came right out and said, Darth Vader Dick and George Bush are war criminals. They need to be hung for war crimes.
And that is completely out of her milieu for her say that. She told Rama.
Allowed to say things like that. That can get her in some real serious hot water.
That means that she got the signal that she could do it, and that's she would never do anything except what she got the signal to do. So
yes.
It means we're entering into another reality.
And I asked the King of Swords about this, and he said, you know, without saying it, yeah, she's been given the signal. As we, you know, tomorrow's 9/11, and 14 years later, we still have no closure to this. And, you know, the rumors that are going on, they're not rumors in this moment as we approach this next eclipse, the partial solar eclipse.
New moon
on the 12th, 13th. This has to do with these final moments here. And I do mean final moments. Like Celia Fenn has said, we're already moving up in ninth dimension, yet the fifth dimension is where we already are.
Sixth through ninth.
That's right.
And it depends on our pursuit of the higher vibrations and navigating that and learning how, as you can take advantage of those things. It takes, you know, we have to delve into that ourselves.
And I bring it back to the little howl, our friend here, our sister, White Paw just gave us. This is the howl that's going across the planet. Everything that's going on right now with Europe has to do with what Darth Vader, Dick, and Bush did as they participated in a coup d'etat against the United States.
And against the Iraqi people.
Right. And Afghanistan. Let's not forget Afghanistan.
I know.
And
but, the thing is that there's other whistleblowers now that are saying exactly what Amy said, too. Colonel Wilkerson has been coming on MSNBC, Al Jazeera, Big Picture on Tom Hartman, and he said regarding Dick Cheney, he needs to go away along with his daughter. And that, as far as I'm concerned, he should be behind bars in a jail cell at the minimum because he's a war criminal.
Yes.
And again, that's something that we've heard from other people, not necessarily even directly like that. It is as blatant as it can be, so we're in a different realm. And also, Rama spoke with this other gentleman, former Democratic senator from Maine named George
Mitchell,
Senator George Mitchell. Now he's an ambassador of peace in the Middle East.
Yes.
And he's talking, and when Rama spoke to him, he said, I can't say anything or I'll be
duck soup.
But I'm going to tell you that we're moving, at that time, we're moving into the next level of this, and it's getting very, very intense.
Yes.
And I just want you to know that this is going to work out, and it's not that far down the road, and please continue doing what you're doing.
I asked the King once again today. Tomorrow, less than 24 hours, we have 9/11 again. What's up on the agenda? And he just said, no comment. So I have to take it to the next level.
What that means is that there's plenty happening and I can't talk to you because you're not on my payroll. I'll have to kill you. You know?
Yeah, and it's not a joke. This is very, very big.
So what I wanted to say is that George
Mitchell
said the same thing that Colonel and Colonel Wilkerson and Amy Goodman said. He got out there publicly, and he was on Chris Hayes, and he was on Al Jazeera, And I'm just saying that when they're going to this level, those kinds of people that have had a gag order, and you know, he said the whole bunch of them.
Yes.
They all are war criminals. They all need, and Amy was clear. She said that they need to be hung. She didn't say go to jail like Wilkerson
said. She was definitive.
Yeah, she said they will be hung. That's what she said. For their war crimes against humanity. That's a whole different ball game.
Yes. And let's just remember, there's been many years where we have heard so many things from all of these people, and they haven't been able to have a voice as they would have liked. So things are safer, as you're saying, or they wouldn't be able to speak this truth to power, because obviously that would put their loved ones in danger, and they've always been in danger for any slight of word. So it's wonderful to hear that they can actually make statements that encourage and show the way.
Yes, and at the same time, some people have, you might say, been bought lately, too.
Yeah.
And one of the lately ones is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's limited to the debates for the Democratic debates to four. And oh, is that his name?
Martin O'Malley.
Martin O'Malley got out there and said, four? And he was on Amy Goodman this morning, and he said, this is criminal. He actually fingered her. And that's not just that he's running for president. He is right on the money that this is criminal. How is the Democratic Party supposed to make their platform in four debates? And what he said on Amy this morning is that there will be more debates, whether, you know, this person said that or not. And what Rama found out is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz took $2 billion from Netanyahu.
Bribe money.
Completely bribed and bought. And so it is. And put her in the circle of support, but that's not cool.
Most of the 535 members of Congress, aside from the 64 good members, have basically signed that little deal with the devil. If you ever saw that movie, Ghost Rider with Nicolas Cage, you get the kind of the drift, only these guys are not doing it in the sense of trying to rectify a wrong. They made a deal with the devil. They are going to have to deal with their issues at hand.
Who was the other person that was bribed, that took money from Debbie Wasserman Schultz did from Netanyahu? There was one more person.
Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer, that's right. He took another $2 billion from to go up against this nuclear deal.
And the Democrats
and Debbie Wasserman Schultz went up against that too, and she went up against President Obama for the Cuba things that he's been doing too.
Yes,
this is very, very.
She is very much beholden to Israel, which is not a good thing. And today, the Democrats did a filibuster about the anti-Iran deal. And
that the Republicans are staging when they don't need to do that at all. In other words, it's already a done deal.
Yes.
42 in the Senate, 42, and that's all they needed, and they don't need any, not one drop more. And they tried to make a vote to get 60% or something, 60, but they only got 58, so they lost that one too.
Yes.
So it's pretty much over for them, although they're not willing to cop to that. They're not.
Yes, and something that may not be that people have heard, what I heard on Sam Cedar today, and I asked the King of Swords about this, there have been on I-10 coming through, I guess, Arizona or Nevada, where I don't remember exactly where I-10 you know, almost to the Mexico border. There have been random shootings of motorists on the highway there.
They're killing. And he doesn't have it. He didn't have it secured, but he said it's pretty much looking like Eric Prince inside the country is using his academy, which was before that it was
Blackwater,
and that these are snipers that are killing ordinary people that are driving by on that highway, and they're using it as a black op to try to blame it on people coming from south of the border into the country.
Calling it domestic terrorism. And
that's the same thing that they're doing all across this planet. They're doing that with ISIL. They're doing that in Ukraine. We've got stealth bombers all set to go to attack Russia on the border of Ukraine.
Yes, and TR-3Bs, the triangular-shaped craft not from Andromeda.
Those are stealth bombers. I thought you said they
the
are.
The TR-3Bs
are
fashioned after the Andromedan craft, but they are completely silent, yet they used that the first day of shock and awe when the Shrub attacked Iraq.
Yeah, and that's just a brief update from Ashtar on the Road. The King told him all this on Tuesday. And there's also F-16s ready to attack Russia on the border.
Yeah.
And what they are doing there is they're trying to he said Bush Jr. used these same things at the first day of the Iraq day of shock and awe. And to remind everybody that even though they said they weren't fighting at all, Germany dropped two neutron bombs on the first day of shock and awe and killed 20,000 innocent Iraqi people with that action. And then in the last 6 weeks, this is what our Congress, minus the 64 good members, have been doing. They've been getting this set up to attack. And that's on the Russia, you know, story going after Russia. They're trying to counteract Wave X with more fear than you can think of.
Yes.
And the divine frequencies coming in. And then the second place to go after is Iran. And regarding that, Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, you know, he's the one that wrote that letter that 47 senators signed and then proceeded to go with a bunch of those folks over there to talk about things even in a private way with Netanyahu. Nobody really knows the whole story to this day. But today, but this time that he's over there, he went over there by himself to visit Netanyahu and completely denigrated President Barack Obama, which is on its face, it's treason. You may not do that to another leader of another country. And that's what he did. And he's being bought completely by the Koch brothers, just so you know that. That's what he's doing. And they put a plan together and set it up to blame, like a false flag event, to blame Hamas for doing whatever that is that they're doing. And then they're going to use it as an excuse to go after Iran, because they're going to say that, you know, as well as Hezbollah, Hamas are getting all their weapons to use on Israel from Iran.
And that's not the case.
None of it is true, but that's the same reason that Netanyahu set it up and made it look like Hamas was attacking Israel, but he was doing it to his own people and rigged it, and then he got an excuse to go slaughter people last summer in Palestine. So this is very not pretty.
Most of the weapons that are ferried across this planet, either lawfully or unlawfully, come from the United States and the U.S. weapons manufacturers. This is why we have to get rid of the NRA.
Okay, now, We wanted to play something. There's more news. But we wanted to do this for the 8 minutes before our guest comes in.
This is so very uplifting.
Yes, and, you know, the divine masculine has entered onto the planet. The sixth through ninth dimensions are wide open and accessible for us to access, to work with those higher frequencies. And these energies are very beautiful, and they're 528 on the solfeggio scale. And this young lady, her name is Violet Rose. Shekinah Rose, right. And she says, this is for the blue rays, the ultra-sensitive empath transmuters, and the starseed light who have a tendency to take on energies from others and the work and the world consciousness. To remember, you are whole, have a tendency to take, you are whole and sovereign to help us through the shift, to release and clear us of anything holding us back, to shield the and enhance our energy body in the power of divine violet rose flame. The higher frequency downloads of the violet rose flame are giving us access to the multidimensional universe of powerful clearing of negativity, blocked energies, and transmuting the DNA mutations. The violet rose flame in the ancient light language transmissions is supreme divine love of transmutation healing to free us of anything holding us back. One more paragraph. The violet rose transmissions occurred at the Cathedral Rock Vortex portal in Sedona through the heart of Mother Gaia and the sacred divine feminine of the Shekinah. They will help us with this shift. It'll raise our frequency and stabilize our energy field so we can live and embody our higher life purpose. So here it's 8 minutes. Here we go, everybody.
Are you there, Tara?
Yes, we're done now. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I know it's 3 minutes after past the
time. Okay, hang on, Tara. I'm going to go ahead and get a number for Jean Slatter. We cannot get her on Skype, so we are going to try to call her. So I'm going to just step back for a moment and get that telephone number to the BBS team.
Okay, that's good. I'll tell something that's fun while you're there doing that. I was going to tell everybody that there is a new species, and it's completely baffling all the doctors.
Scientists.
And the scientists, because... Can you turn that light on? I can see better. Because this new species is definitely part of us, our genus, human, except that they are different in certain aspects. Let me see. Scientists confirm that remains discovered in South Africa are in fact a new species of human. The bones are at least 2 million years old, and experts say they could redefine our very overstanding of a human evolutionary tree. Oh, it's stunning. Now, I wrote some more. Let me just go there. Where is it now? And please put the refugees in the circle of support. Hungary is being brutal. They're beating them. They're not giving them any food. They're giving them water, but they're leaving them out in cold rain, and the weather's changing much more radically over there than it is over here. Children are crying. Babies are getting shivers and cold, and there's no place for them to shelter, and they won't let them. Austria shut down their railroad trains, and these people are sitting there in... They're not being cared for properly, and this is terrifying. So, Northern Ireland's parliament is in crisis. The pro-British First Minister Peter Robinson was resigned, along with most of his ministers. That was after a senior figure of the Nationalist Party and the power-sharing government was arrested in relation to an alleged IRA murder. Yet he's just been released, without charges. So this is the battle of doing the right thing versus the naughty people, continuing to protect their... So we have a new family member. Exciting. The discovery of a new species of human, unlike any researchers have ever seen before. Skeletons found in South Africa are thought to be at least 2 million years old. Scientists say they are similar, though, to modern humans, and that the discovery... from 2 million years ago that looks just very similar could redefine our understanding of our evolutionary tree. The new species of human ancestor is named Homo naledi. Naledi means star man in the Sotho language spoken in the region down there in South Africa. Researchers have discovered over 1,550 fossil elements in a cave there. The early hominid had some ape-like features, yet also resembled us in many ways. The biggest surprise involved the circumstances surrounding the bones discovery two years ago. They were found undamaged, deep underground, a stark indicator that other hominids brought them there, rather than predators or floods. The bone's final resting place is only accessible through a narrow gap in the rock. Researchers suspect Homo naledi buried their own dead. Until now, scientists had believed only modern humans performed that kind of ritual. Then Lee Berger, University of Witwatersrand, says, we've discovered, he's a scientist, a new species of hominid within our own genus. We're calling it Homonelid, or Star Man. It's a remarkable... No. Oh.
Okay, she's not hearing us, she's not seeing our text, and I can't get her on the phone. So I thought maybe you could try to get her on the phone. Oh, okay, there she's gone. All right, it's that kind of night, everybody. Sorry to interrupt you, Tara. Finish what you were. We need a little time, and we asked for that backup. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I wonder if they were thinking everything was going so well. Okay, it's a remarkable...
Yeah, we see that.
Can you get her back now?
Maybe that'll... Right. Oh, not at all. So even if you call her, she won't pick up.
She's not there.
All right, thank you. Well, we'll just keep going here. I am going to try to find Gene Slatter's number. You go ahead, and I'll step aside.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody. Okay. So, it's a remarkable species, like nothing we've ever seen before. A tiny little head, the size of an orange, with very human-like sized teeth, yet also teeth that are shaped like much more primitive hominids. And then the reporter says, Homo naledi was about 1.5 meters in height. That means 4.5 feet. That's what it means.
A hobbit.
Well, yeah, that's right. Yet their brain is only the size of an orange. Archaeologists are still in the process of analyzing their astonishing find. They hope to learn a lot more about our distant cousins in the near future. And then D.W., asks, Mr. Peter Schmid, S-C-H-M-I-D, is a paleoanthropologist in South Africa from the Institute of Human Evolution at Witwatersrand University. Professor, this is a discovery.
Hello.
Okay. Hello, Jean.
Hi. I've been listening, and I heard that you couldn't get a hold of me, but nobody was calling.
Oh, well.
Okay. Welcome. We're sorry to interrupt you, Tara and Rama, but we have.
Really, that's weird. I answered your request at 7:03. So I don't
know.
Yeah,
but you weren't online for Doug to answer you back.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. Well, we are here now.
Okay. Well, this is Kathy in the background. We're backing up Marita, who we lost her on Skype. She didn't come in because she was on the road. It's just one of those backup nights. I'm speaking... What? Right, and I'm doing the same, and we are actually in that kind of limbo this evening as she's not even answering texts. All right, and she's been on the road. So just a little backup for you, Jean. We welcome you. We're going to let Tara finish just the end of what she was saying. We know we're way behind schedule. Please forgive us, and we'll just take a moment to switch back and let you finish quickly, if you could, Tara, so that we can move to the guest hour.
All is well.
Thank you. Tara, go right ahead and finish what you were sharing. And now we've lost communication with Tara. Well, how do you do?
I'm here. You want me to finish what I was sharing for what reason?
Well, we wanted you, you were stopped mid-sentence, and we don't have time to finish it all, but if you could just give us a synopsis so that we can finish one conversation and move into the next.
Okay. Homo naledi was about 1.5 meters in height, 4.5 feet. They have feet similar to ours. yet their brain is only the size of an orange. Archaeologists are still in the process of analyzing their astonishing find. They hope to learn a lot more about our distant cousins in the near future. And Peter said, as a paleontologist, he said, this is a discovery, and as we just heard, this species might have buried their dead, just like humans. How do the scientists know that? And he says it's a little bit far-reaching to say a burial, yet it's that these forms put their dead in this cave somehow, because there are no other possibilities, that there's no other predators, no sign of them whatsoever, and they could go in there because as they were in there on their own, then other animals should have been there also, yet they didn't show that. So I'll stop there and just say that this is a whole new thing, and I just remember Mother telling us that all kinds of new discoveries were going to emerge just when we thought that there weren't anything going on here except what us humans. And this is another type of same genus, but humans, that they discovered that do things that humans do 2 million years ago. All right, that's good enough for now. Thank you. Thank you for letting me finish that, Kath.
Of course. You just can't jump around. We have to at least finish a thought so that we can move to the next. And, Jean, please accept our apology and welcome to Stargate Roundtable. Before I bring you in, I want to share with the audience that it's been a number of years. For those who came in late, we've had Jean on this program before, and many of you, like myself, bought her book, and she is an accomplished naturopath. She's an author, an inspirational speaker, and founder of a higher guidance life coaching certification program, basically a creative mystic, and one that we're very happy to receive. So, Jean, let's have you, in your own words, introduce yourself and share what is on your thinking tonight.
Thanks, Kathy. Well, you know, I just don't want to forget, and I want to find out, was it Tara that was reading something about that,
yes,
the bones that were 2 million years old? Where did you get that from? I'd love to read that.
Tara, you need to step back in. Sometimes they walk away for a moment and they don't realize they're being addressed.
Now, what do you want me to do now?
Just would love to know where you were reading that from.
Well, I transcribed it from DW News, which was out of Berlin. And tonight on Al Jazeera, they had a whole section on it. So, and you can go to, how do you go to Al Jazeera? Al Jazeera.
AlJazeera.com.
AlJazeera.com. AlJazeera.com. And it'll be on there.
It's on NBC.com as well.
Yep. So it's on the news. It's there. So we're not going to hear the last of this one. I'll just say that.
You know, I know we're getting off topic, but one of my favorite shows is Battlestar Galactica.
And you're just like my beloved here. He's a Trekkie.
I when that came on in 1978, right after Star Wars, I was hooked. I mean, it opened up so many doorways. It was like a continuation of Star Trek after it got canceled, because it brought in the intergalactic story that George Lucas, you know, began with Star Wars, and Gene Roddenberry began with Star Trek.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you one thing, Gene, because Rama met Worf.
Yeah.
Rama met Worf.
Michael Dorn.
Michael Dorn is his name, and he was down in Albuquerque at the Whole Foods. And Rama walked right, or was it Alfalfa's at that time? It was one of those places. Anyway, what's his Dorn?
Michael Dorn.
Michael Dorn told Rama that I'm not just playing a role on TV. He said, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and I went up from the top of Mount Kilimanjaro onto Lady Master Athena's starship. She actually contacted me and told me, get up there, and then I'll take you up.
Yeah.
And he told this. He's telling this story to Rama in the middle of Whole Foods or Alfalfa's, whichever.
I love it. Yeah.
Yes.
When you were reading about the 2-million-year-old bones, one of my favorite lines in Battlestar Galactica was, all this has happened before and will happen again.
Indeed.
Oh, indeed.
Beam me up, Scotty. It's time. More naughty kids stopping the music. Let's go.
Okay, so is Marita on tonight too?
No, we had her, and then she disappeared. She's not responding to my texts. Nobody's phone calls are getting through to her, and she's offline and can't get her back. So I did know that. I was backing her up. We saw her come back in, but we never. She did. You know, IM us on the board. So we may be hearing from her. We're hoping to, but we're going to continue and allow you to take that talking stick, Jean.
Okay, I will do that, Kathy. Thank you so much. And, you know, here's the thing. I was tuning in for about 20 minutes before the top of the hour and listening to the conversation. You guys are wild.
Are we?
I love it.
How so?
I love it.
I mean, wild is a big word. How so?
Okay. Meaning you are free thinkers. You don't go with the normal media programming and the conditioning that, you know, you seek deeper truths. And I love that. And I love how willing you are to question, you know?
Yes.
And so applause to you.
I know you speak to all of us because that's just what kind of show this is. And so many of our followers are on that page. We are just one with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, if you want to know a little bit of introduction about me, has been my journey. Let me just say that I grew up in a cult. For the first 19 years of my life, 20 years of my life, I was in a cult. And I believed it. Of course, you know, you're conditioned from the time you're a little kid. I believed that was it. That was the truth. And I followed that hook, line, and sinker. And when I was 19, I began to question it. I won't go into the whole story, but began to actually question it and then felt so ashamed that I had bought into it.
Yeah.
When I realized that it was a lie.
Well, you were born into it. Born into it.
I was. So, you know, I give myself a little bit of leniency there, but I do believe that that was my perfect. I'm very grateful for it because I believe my soul came in as one of its core thought forms to understand the difference between dogma and heart, and what happens when we adhere to some kind of a dogma and are unable to think for ourselves. And I certainly couldn't for the first 19 years of my life. I didn't dare think for myself because I was told that if I dared question, I could be excommunicated. And well, you know, there was nothing worse. I mean, that was a fate worse than death. And so I couldn't question, wouldn't dare. Plus, I would lose my status of being chosen. And I think that's what a lot of religions do, is tell you you're special and chosen above everybody else. And people will do almost anything to hold on to that superiority. Yeah. And I did. I confess. So when I was 19 and I began to question it for the first time in my life and then realized it was a lie, it really felt like the rug was pulled out from underneath me, and it actually put me into quite a depression because I realized I was like everybody else, you know? Oh my gosh, you know, I'm one of you guys.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
So I actually, for the next 20 years, swore off anything to do with religion, anything to do with spirituality, wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. You couldn't talk to me about anything in any way, shape, or form that sounded like God, angels, spirit. I mean, if I couldn't see it in front of my face, it didn't exist, and you were crazy to even think that that could possibly exist. That's where I was for the next 20 years. And then I had a pivotal moment that changed everything for me and made me take a look and say, maybe I threw the baby out with the bathwater, and maybe there really is something else, and maybe we really are a divine spiritual being. And it's been 20 years since that time. So when I was 40, I had my pivotal moment, and now I'm 60, and it's been such an incredible journey. But I do look back at it and see the purpose in the whole journey. Because if I came here to understand that, how much better could it have been to have been born into a cult where I really understood what it was like to give up your mind, to give up being able to question, to give up your
sovereignty.
Yes. Yes, to give that completely over to some type of dogma or some guy on the pulpit, you know? And then to spend the next 20 years in denial of all of it. You know, to finally come back around and say, all right, let me remake myself. And this time, when I do it, I'm going to do it solely from my own inner truth. And during the when I turned 40 and I had my pivotal moment, and that's what my book, Higher in the Heavens, is about. Not so much in the way that I'm talking about, but more about the magic I was experiencing, connecting with it. But Higher in the Heavens was a fun way for me to introduce myself back to the idea that there is something more beyond this physical expression, that there is a divine aspect to each and every one of us, and that there's other dimensions that are here to assist us in whatever our creation here on this planet. And so it was a very fun way, but gradually and ever so gently, it opened me up to the truth of who I am and the truth of my divinity. And I can only say this now after, actually, it was after the book had been written. But once I knew that I had access to the something beyond and I could converse and talk with them, then I had all sorts of questions. I wanted to know, who are we? How'd we get here? What's the purpose of life? Does any of this really matter? Is there, you know, is this just a big cosmic joke or what? Is there actually purpose here? So I had all kinds of questions. And during that time, I spent 3 years where I conversed with my own higher guidance. And they never let me read any books. They said, you know, you've had the experience of growing up in a cult where you were told what to believe. Now you're not going to get it from books anymore. You got to get it, you know, straight from source, from your own source, and listen to that first, and then we'll let you read some books and you can get some confirmation. So that's what ended up happening, and it's been quite a journey, and that's why I call my website Creative Mystic, is because, you know, I figured I was asking all the mystic questions. Who am I? How'd I get here? And what's the purpose? Yeah. I mean, those are the quintessential mystic questions, and I figured that I didn't have time to go sequester myself up on a mountaintop for years. I had 4 kids and a career and a husband, and what was I to do? So I had to get creative. Yeah. So that's why it was called Creative Mystic.
I think it would be maybe a good moment, if you could, for those who don't know about you, Jean, to talk about that creative moment when, as a naturopathic doctor, you're there with a patient sitting there, and something needed to be said or done, and you needed to look it up. Would you share that story so that people know about how it started for you?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking, Kathy. Yeah, you know, my career at the time was a traditional naturopath, and I had learned how to douse. That's how I communicated with a person's body. Some people use muscle testing. I used a pendulum. That's just how I communicated. And I was doing a technique called allergy clearing. Now, again, let's go back. I was at a point in time of my life where I wanted nothing to do with spirituality. I wanted nothing to do with the word angels, God. I was not comfortable with any of those words. I just wanted to deal with nutrition, with herbs, with lifestyle changes. You know, that's all I wanted to work with. And, you know, something that made sense, that was logical. So I'm doing this technique with a client called allergy clearing, and using the pendulum said I needed to clear 5 neurotransmitters, which are neurochemicals in the brain, like serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine. Well, I was able to come up with 4 of the 5, but could not think of what that 5th neurotransmitter could be. And so out of sheer frustration, I said to my client, who was a layperson, you got to picture, just a normal layperson, I said, well, your body keeps telling me I need to clear 5 neurotransmitters. I can only think of 4. So let's reschedule. I need some time to do some research and figure out what this 5th neurotransmitter is. And then she said to me, out of the blue, first thing she says, well, is histamine a neurotransmitter? And I said, I looked at her rather strange. I said, no, histamine isn't a neurotransmitter. It's the stuff your sinuses produce when you have an allergic reaction. That's why you would take an antihistamine, but it's not a neurotransmitter. Then, in the very next second, I turned around and I pulled a book off my shelf that I had purchased 1 year prior, but I had never opened it. But for some reason, I grab it right off the shelf, and the book falls open to a page where histamine is in the title. So that in and of itself, I thought was pretty amazing. Oh, look at this. It's talking about histamine. And then in the very next nanosecond, it's as if something took my eyeballs and pointed them at a line buried in a paragraph. It's the only thing I read on the entire 8.5 by 11 page. It said, histamine is also thought to be a neurotransmitter. That was my pivotal moment, because you cannot explain that by saying it was mere coincidence, can you?
Wild. That's wild.
That's wild. Yeah, that's
Jean,
wild.
Did you say, I'm not sure if I heard that right, did you say that histamine is considered a neurotransmitter?
Yes. That's exactly what that line in the book said. And it's the only thing I read. It said histamine is also thought to be a neurotransmitter. So when I read that, I could barely speak. I felt the hair on the back of my neck rise, and I was shaking inside because I just knew something very extraordinary had just occurred. First of all, when I needed to know what that 5th neurotransmitter was, my client asked, is histamine a neurotransmitter? And I said no. Then something makes me turn around, pull the book off the shelf, open the page, and then say, yeah, it is. See right here?
Yeah. And for your client to even say that, to have the knowledge that that could even be a neuro. transmitter was amazing in and of itself. That's not something we would normally even know.
No, no, that person was totally, they probably had no control over those words coming out of their mouth. Because
right, exactly.
Yeah, nobody says that. So that was my moment when, like I said, I was pretty shook up. Of course, I finished with my client, but I could not wait for her to get out the door. I had to really sit with that. And I was kind of a little freaked out inside because I was coming from a place where I did not want to acknowledge anything beyond what I could see with my eyes and this physical dimension. And here was an experience that clearly came from somewhere else. Something had to whisper those words to my client. Something had to make me turn around and open the book. You cannot explain that it just happened by coincidence. There's just no way. So I had to grapple with that idea, and I'm just floundering around thinking, what was that about? What was that about? What was that about? You know, what could that have possibly been? And about that time, I had heard about psychic surgery. And had just started to... you know, just by, again, happenstance, that, and maybe not, but I had just started to learn about psychic surgery, where there's a being from another dimension working through somebody on the physical dimension. And so I thought to myself, maybe, just maybe, I have a spiritual physician ready and willing on some other dimension to work with me, with my clients. And it's important to note here, and again, this is my reasoning at the time, the only reason I thought that that could be a possibility is because I was doing a good thing, helping clients. And this, I want you to really take note of this, because this is going to play in, and it's so, 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 so important here. But the only reason I thought initially that it was working is because I was doing a good thing. So I was helping people. Okay, maybe I've got a spiritual physician. Well, if I do, then I'm going to call upon this spiritual physician and ask them to help me with my other clients. So every day after that, I never even gave him a name. I just called upon my spiritual physician and I said, okay, here's so-and-so coming in and they've got problems with diabetes. And here's another person coming in and they've got problems with fibromyalgia. Tell me what to do. And I started receiving information. Words were just coming out of my mouth. I just would find myself saying things like that client did when she said, is histamine a neurotransmitter? I found myself saying things that, what? Where'd that come from? And it would be just exactly what was right for that client. Well, all right. So I was pretty blown away by that. And it was obvious to me that I did have a spiritual physician working with me. And in my mind, the only reason that was occurring is because I was doing a good thing. And what you'll see is this plays into all of our fears of worthiness, because I thought I had to be worthy of that help and I had to be doing a good thing to be able to deserve it. Well, then I thought to myself, if I'm getting help with a spiritual physician, maybe they can help me with other aspects of my business. I need a spiritual time manager, and I need a spiritual marketer, and I need a spiritual financial consultant and a spiritual secretary. So I imagined hiring all of those positions on the spiritual level. And as soon as I did, Kathy, you would not believe the help I got. It was so phenomenal. I'll just cut to the chase. It was so phenomenal for the next 10 years, I was able to support our family of four kids while my husband was able to stay home. I only worked part-time, and I was still able to support the family very well and never had to hire anybody on the physical level because everything I needed was taken care of for me by my spiritual team.
I don't have words.
That's quite a, it's such a profound thing to say.
It is. And it got, see, here's the thing. We teach that which we most want to learn. This, I, on a deep soul level, I didn't even know it at the time, but this is what I wanted to know. I wanted to experience this on a deep soul level. So I was learning it from the ground up, so to speak. And when they gave me the message then later that I needed to write a book about this, I said, are you kidding? I have no idea what to do, how to write a book. Well, okay, so I put together a spiritual book writing committee. And I said, you're going to help me with this. And I don't even know where to begin. How do I even develop this? Well, as soon as I put my spiritual book writing committee together, I got a phone call from a complete stranger. And she said, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a developmental editor. And I was just wondering if you had any book projects you're working on. You could have pushed me.
That's so crazy.
I know. You could have pushed me over with a feather. Oh, my gosh. So, I mean, the stories go on and on. I know we're short of time here, but the flat-out miracles, Kathy. This is the most amazing thing. Once I started to really delve into this, what I came to understand is that it wasn't working. It didn't have to work just for business because I was doing a good thing and helping people. I could ask for just simply me, you know, for no other reason than to help me find some clothes or to help me find the perfect hair color. So when I'd go, you know, look for a color, I'd say, okay, I'm hiring a spiritual hairdresser. Help me find the perfect hair color. Well, that spiritual hairdresser found a color for me that I have been using now for years. I absolutely love this color. I don't think
what
I'll ever
that?
Change
auburn?
It.
Auburn? Like an auburn?
Yeah. It's like a brown, golden brown. I love this, and it's a natural color. They pointed it out to me and said, this is the one that's going to be perfect for you.
That is beautiful.
Let me tell you a miracle story. And I really could, we could talk all night about the things that have happened, but.
We started late, so we have time. It's only 10:45 and we didn't even get started till 10:45. So pace yourself.
Okay. So I'll tell you a couple miracle stories because it's important that people recognize that we are so much more than what we think we are. We think we're this just a human body on the physical plane. But if we really, you know, Wayne Dyer said, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Well, that sounds great. And it makes sense, and we go, yeah, that's it. But how many of us really live that way? How many of us really connect with and know our divinity and live from that incredible expansiveness of who we truly are? Instead, what ends up happening is we get caught up in our day-to-day minutiae, we get caught up with taking the kids to soccer, getting the dishes done, doing the laundry. I got to get this done. I got to get that done. And we forget that that we're connected to the most powerful force in the universe. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger. And it's who we are, and it's our birthright. And we totally forget all about it. Here we are. We're sweating over paying the bills. And yet, we're an immortal being.
Yeah.
Connected to this immense power. And we forget that. But that's what I had to learn. And so they showed it to me at first in just really fun ways. So here's a story. One time I was giving a talk about 4 hours away, and I was on the subject of hiring the heavens, and as I was driving there, just before I arrived at my destination, it's a good thing that there was a gas station right next to the hotel where I was giving the presentation because my heat gauge was all the way over in the red and steam was pouring out of the front of the engine. Well, I pulled into the gas station and there happened to be a mechanic there. He took a look and he said, "You have a serious oil leak. You are going to have to get that fixed." I said, "Well, I can't think about that now. I have a presentation to do. I'm going to leave the car here. When I come back in a couple hours, you know, I'll figure out what I'm going to do." So I went and gave my presentation. And when I finished, I'm walking back to where my car is, and I hire a spiritual mechanic. And I say to this spiritual mechanic, I say, "You know, listen, I drove 4 hours to get here. I don't want to spend the night here. Let me put in a couple quarts of oil, and would you please just fix the leak so that I can get home, and then my husband can take the car in and we can get it fixed there? Could you do that for me?" Well, guess what? Not only was I able to get home, but guess what? I never had to fix that leak.
Oh, my goodness.
It was sometime later, I'm telling that story to a group of people, and there was a skeptical gentleman in the front row, and he said, "Yeah, you better get that leak fixed, though." And I said, "Well, I would, but that was 5 years ago." Never had to fix it. Well, so they, you know, your spiritual hires will go above and beyond the call of duty. And not only that, they will perform for you in ways that it will leave no doubt in your mind that it was them at work. Let me tell you another really fun story.
Well, before you do, Jean, okay. I think for those who go to bed early, I want to make sure your website gets out there, any way to contact you, how to get your book, probably on Amazon. A lot of us have it. I have it. I remember buying it immediately after you were on this program years ago. So go ahead and please share that information.
They can go to jeanslater.com, and that's J-E-A-N, S is in Sam, L-A-T-T-E-R. Even though it looks like Slatter, it's Slater. And they can also go to Creative Mystic, both places, if you type in either one, it'll go to the same place. They can get my book on Amazon. That's how you get in touch with me.
We really appreciate that. I'm going to have to pull that book out again and dust it off and start using it. I've done it different times over, you know, you go in through, different loops of practices, and then you kind of let things go. You still talk to your guides. You still ask for what you want. But the way you share it in your book, the whole practice of setting up teams, is pretty cool to turn my thoughts and attention back to it again.
Kathy, I've read my book at least 5 times. So I hear you. You forget. I'm guilty of that. I get caught up in my life, and then all of a sudden I forget to ask, and I forget what my true nature is.
Yeah.
And we do need to be reminded. And so, yeah, these inspiring stories help to remind us of who we really are. This is one of the most wonderful little stories I heard. There in my book, I talk about an amazing story of a friend who had lost an irregular shaped pearl in her ring, and how she hired a spiritual jewelry sleuth to find that pearl and bring it to her. And an hour later, the dog jumps up on the bed and drops it right in front of her hand. Now, that was mind-blowing. So I've told that story over and over and over of this spiritual jewelry sleuth. And apparently she's the best in the universe. And once her spiritual phone number got out, she was being called upon for all sorts of missing jewelry. Well, there is a review for my book on Amazon from somebody that told her story, and I've since been in contact with her because it's just so lovely. It's just, oh, you're kidding, and talk about fun. I think they this other realm must stay up at night thinking of fun ways to do things that will be just, you know, just put a smile on your face. Yeah. So here's what happened for her. When she was a little girl, her mother had promised her the mother's opal ring. Well, years later, when the mother passed away, the daughter looked for the opal ring and could not find it anywhere. They went through the house top to bottom, could not find that opal ring, so she was very disappointed. 3 years later, she reads my book and hears about the spiritual jewelry sleuth. So she thought to herself, well, I wonder if the spiritual jewelry sleuth could find my mother's opal ring. I'd love to have it. The very next day, she's doing her laundry. She's mating socks. One of the socks has a knot in it. She's untying the sock and kind of feels like there's something in the sock. She reaches in and pulls out her mother's opal ring.
Unbelievable.
Now, that's what I'm saying. They must think, okay, I know, we'll put it in her sock.
I mean, right now, my mind goes right to a piece of jewelry that I've never been able to find. I feel it's on my property, and I am going to put that whole thing together, along with an awful lot of viewers out there. Everybody's lost something that they mourn it still.
Yes. Hire that spiritual jewelry sleuth. She is amazing. I was giving a presentation again another time, and there was a lady in the audience who called me afterwards and told me what happened on her way home. She was a widow, and for 10 years, her wedding band had been missing. And she thought, on her drive home, she thought, you know what? I'm hiring the spiritual jewelry sleuth. Can you find... Pardon me? Oh, I heard a caller.
Okay, Doug, we heard you in the background there. We weren't sure if you needed us.
Carlton is online, too, is what Doug is saying.
Oh, we do have a caller. All right, Carlton, hang on just a minute. We're going to let her finish finish your sentence, and we'll bring in this caller. Go right ahead.
Okay, excellent. So on her way home, she hired the spiritual jewelry sleuth, and she said, you know, I'd really would love that wedding band in remembrance of my husband, and I know it's been missing for 10 years, but could you bring it to me? When she got home, she sat down on her couch. You got to really picture this here. She puts her feet up on the coffee table in front of her, and she has a live plant that was no more than 2 years old sitting on her coffee table. She notices that there is a dead leaf on the plant. She reaches over to pull the dead leaf off and sees something shiny in the soil and pulls up her missing wedding band.
Unbelievable. You can't explain these things.
You can't. And so I want to make one more point here before we talk to the caller. Eventually, when all of these things start to happen, as they did for me, and as I started to see everything in my life could be assisted by help from this other dimension, I had to ask myself the question, why? What made me so important that I could get help from this unseen dimension for everything from my work to finding the perfect hair color? How is that possible? Why is that possible? And that is what led me to understanding who I really am. And I want to get into that before, but we'll first take this caller.
Okay, well, you're on the air, Carlton. Go right ahead with your question.
This evening, I just wonder if your experience so far has allowed you to, and maybe some of that, maybe you're going to address some of that next, but allowed you to kind of discern between the experiences that you've had with achieving some of the things that you've wanted to through the spiritual realm, and how it's achieved in other situations. And I ask that from this standpoint. I mean, I don't have any question about why I'm worthy, because we all are, right? We're all spiritual beings. We're all from the divine. I've often asked the divine company of heaven, the God within me, spiritual realm, the angelic realm, for help with some serious issues that I've been facing in recent years. And so far, those situations still remain. And I feel that it is absolutely past time for those to be cleared and move on to other things. And they're still here. So, you know, and I meditate frequently. But when you're facing some very, very serious challenges that involve, you know, a roof over your head, food for you and your family, you know, whether or not you are unjustly incarcerated, you know, it's really hard to stay still. But I've certainly attempted to do it, and I've used the techniques that you certainly referred to. And I don't know if you've had to face that yourself, or if you've experienced that situation with others, and, you know, care to comment on how your experience would tie into that.
Wow. Well, I do have an answer, because I ask those same kinds of questions of my spiritual hires. As I said, I journaled for 3 years asking all these types of tough questions, and that is a tough question. And one would ask, you know, why is it that some things seem to appear when you ask for it, and other things are the struggle continues, and we scratch our head and we say, you know, I have no idea why I have to go through this and why this is happening. In answer to your question, and there could be many possibilities, but I'll give you the biggest answer that I can, the biggest overarching answer, is that what my guidance said is that who we are creators, and I'm sure you would agree with that, we are divine creators, and we are creators of what? We are creators of experience. Why? So that we can know the truth of that experience. And so when you look up the definition of experience, the definition is practical information derived through direct participation. In other words, you lived it. How else are you going to know except through living it? And furthermore, I'm going to go a little bit deeper. I hope I don't, you know, like, I'm not getting off subject here, but I just want to tell you the importance of experience. One day I was doing a meditation where I was drawing up energy from the earth and drawing down energy from the heavens and mixing it within my body, you know, and having it fill up my entire body, my cells, and then burst forth. And it was a meditation I'd done many, many, many times. And I would picture a green coming in from the earth and a violet purple coming in from the heavens. Well, one morning I was trying to meditate and trying to experience it, something I'd done many times, and nothing was happening. I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't see any color. Nothing. And it was like, I'm getting frustrated, like, come on, let me feel this. And it was so blank. It was completely, oddly blank. And in my frustration, I'm why can't I feel this? And all of a sudden, I hear kind of a chuckle from my guidance. And they said, there is no such thing as energy. And I argued immediately. And I said, everything's energy. And they said, no, everything's an illusion.
including light and energy. And I go, okay, everything's an illusion, including what we call energy and light. Well, then is anything real? And they said, yeah, one thing, experience. It's the only thing that's real. So when we leave this planet, do we take any energy with us? Do we take any light with us? The only thing we take with us is experience. That is why we're here. We are creators of experience. So my question to you would be, and I want you to zoom out here, what is it that your soul is trying to know the truth of? If we are creators of experience, to know the truth of that experience, what is it your soul is trying to know the truth of? You know, I was just talking with a client the other day, and she was telling me how she grew up with a father that was an alcoholic, brilliant, handsome man who was an alcoholic and crazy. And so what she ended up doing is marrying a couple guys like that afterwards. And then, you know, she's just kind of looking back at her life. She had just gotten out of another marriage and said, what am I doing? You know, and it's just, why does this keep happening? Why is this occurring? And why can't I move past that? And so her answer to that was she really needed to forgive. And this is what she thought she needed to do. She really needed to forgive her father, forgive her husbands, and forgive herself for going through all that. Well, I can say that on one level that's true, but on another level that's not at all true. And what I asked her to do was zoom out a little bit. Now, when you zoom out and from the soul's perspective, if she wanted to understand the truth of that experience, and I won't go into what exactly we determined that experience was, what the core of it was, but how much better to put herself into, how brilliantly she put herself into a situation where her father was alcoholic and crazy. I look back at my experience. One of my core thought forms I came here to understand was understanding the difference between dogma and heart. How much better to put me in a situation where I'm raised in a cult for 20 years. And how much better to shun that for the next 20 years? How brilliant was that? And so there's a bigger picture going on. And if you can get a grasp on that, what you're doing is like, what I want to say to you is that I want to really empower that divine aspect or that the divinity of who you are that knows exactly what you're doing. There's great purpose. And maybe, you know, it's like the can't see the forest through the trees, and it's right, you know, you may be enmeshed in it, and that's, you know, that's life. But perhaps, and I would just encourage you to maybe zoom out and ask your soul, if I had something in mind here, what was it? What was the intent? It's kind of like if you decided to go to college and get a PhD in a particular subject, and you knew it was really going to be hard because it was a subject in as a physicist or some, you know, really difficult subject, and you knew that it was going to take everything you had to graduate and to write your thesis, and you did it. You committed yourself to going through school, getting your degree, and not only that, you graduated with honors. Do you ever have to forgive yourself for what you did? No. And all of us are going through, you know, we decide to take on a certain study. And when we do that, it's not that we have to go back and forgive ourselves for that. We need to congratulate ourselves. Congratulate ourselves that we had the courage to take on such a difficult subject and live it and experience it. I hope that helps. I don't know. I'm curious of your thoughts.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Now I'm sure there is, you know, there is a larger theme at work here, but then at the same time, when you listen to all the other teachings and experiences that others have had, you know, it's tough because everybody has their own unique path, and sometimes someone else's direct experience is anecdotal for, you know, I mean, something that can work in your situation, and sometimes you know, it's meant for you to follow a little bit more of a unique path, but in short, it'll all work out. But you know, Matt Kahn is he's a mystic teacher, and one of the things that he taught recently is that one of the key aspects of mastery is being able to bless people. And so I want to thank you for your blessing, as Tara says, Lady Master. All right, Janet, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I do. I believe in blessing far beyond forgiveness, because blessing eliminates the need for forgiveness. And furthermore, I just want to make another point here that unfortunately, with all of the conditioning and media and whatnot, it's so seducing to buy into the idea of the one-size-fits-all, this is what success looks like.
Right, yeah.
And I believe we are God incarnate. So we are here to the variety that we have in expression of our divinity is limitless, and it's impossible to come up with a one size fits all. That it has to look like this, right? You know, you have to have the big house, you have to have the great job, you have to have this and that, otherwise you're not a success. Mm-hmm. I don't buy that at all.
Boy, this is over.
I'll leave the call over. Thanks.
Oh,
thanks very much.
Before you go, Carlton, I just want to, Carlton, stay here for a minute. I just wanted to ask you so that Carlton can listen to. So what you mean, Gene, that what you're saying is that the reason that Carlton has still got these things, that the approach is not to, you know, meditate for something to be alleviated. That doesn't answer anything. And it's the same thing like our friend that wrote The Isaiah Effect.
Greg Braden.
You know, he was hanging out with this Pueblo elder. And, you know, they were talking and he was saying, you know, it hasn't rained for months up here in Taos and Cuesta, and it's really something. So can we do something? Do you know how to get something to happen like that? And he said, yeah, you want to come along? Okay. He went out there onto the parched earth. He took his moccasins off, and, you know, he started to, you know, in the dry earth, he just wiggled his toes and dug in. And then he kind of put his hands out and he said, we're praying rain. And that's what we're doing. And Greg was saying, well, what about the four? And he said, you're not doing anything like that, because then it takes it away from the experience. He said, we're praying rain. In 10 minutes, mm-hmm. it started to rain, and it rained gently, and it rained for 3 days gently until the whole earth had absorbed everything it needed, and then it stopped.
Excellent.
So my take on what Jean is saying is what her, what did you call the one that was telling you the answer about, you said light and energy, they're real, they certainly are, and then you instead of arguing, you stopped and you said, well, then what really, what is real? And then the answer came experience. So that's what the Pueblo Native American was teaching too. We are God, Goddess, all that is, and we have the ability to navigate all that is because we're equal to all that is. And that is a big lesson, isn't it?
That was good, Tara. That was good.
Yeah. So, Jean, are you there?
I am. I am. And you know, it's the thing, though, that we tend to, and I'm going to go back to this, we tend to buy into the idea that, okay, here's a perfect life, and this is what it should look like. And if you don't... And if you don't have this, then you can't possibly be, you know, spiritual, or you can't possibly, you know, be doing things right, whatever that is. What I'm saying is that our experience here, again, is as unique and as varied as every single soul on the planet. And how can it be otherwise? How can it be otherwise? And to say that there is like, oh, only one way it should look is absurd. So I look at, you know, some of the things that the difficult things that Carlton was going through, and I say, oh my gosh, the only way that would happen is that your soul had the strength and the courage to take on such a difficult thesis. And you're not going to stop until you graduate, so to speak. And how amazing you are to have that fortitude, that willingness to feel and experience to such depth. It's extraordinary.
And we congratulate you. Didn't you say we can congratulate
you? You guys are the best. I'm sitting here sending you all sorts of light and love, and I really appreciate all the kindness and the encouragement. And there may be another caller, so I'll get off the line now. But thanks so much.
Perfect.
Again, really, really.
There's no other caller, but we thank you for your sensitivity and clarity, and we do congratulate you because that is the new way to look at our lives, not forgive, but to congratulate for the choices we've made.
Yes.
Love it. Thank you, Carlton. Yeah. We appreciate your being on tonight. Wow. Wow. Where do you want to go from here? I mean, Gene, we could go, like you said, all night long. This is just, you know, a favorite subject kind of thing. But we know there are so many other things that you're doing. And did you want to touch on those, the conversation around the latest coaching courses, certifications? Tell us more.
So my naturopathic work quickly began to shift, and it ended up becoming what I later called higher guidance life coaching, because once I realized that there's purpose and expression to, you know, what it, you know, how our body is manifesting a particular illness. It's trying to tell us something. And what is that? And there's a bigger picture going on. And I wanted to know what that was about and help that person to get in touch with that. So I switched my practice into higher guidance life coaching. And I did that for a number of years and then created a certification course so that others can become higher guidance life coaches. And so that is all on my site. I am so excited and happy about it because it is in and of itself extremely unique because it honors the journey that each and every one of us is on. I call it the most fantastic treasure hunt you can possibly imagine, and you are the prize. Yeah.
Oh my God, that was like powerful. Just let me take that in.
It is. It is the most fantastic treasure hunt you can imagine, and you are the prize. And every step along the way, you are leaving clues about the gems, about who you are and how you create. And the journey lasts a lifetime. So in my life coaching course, I provide a soul's map. And this map is simply a free form structure within which higher guidance can point and say, I'm right here. You know, there's no beginning, there's no end. But right now I'm right here, and this is what I'm wanting to know the truth of. And so it helps the person to kind of get that next gem on their treasure hunt. So that's what it's about, and I love it, and it's an absolute high.
I'm going to tell you something. I am feeling that high. I'm liking every bit of this. I feel like, you know, like my heart chakra has expanded, and I'm just feeling grateful for that service, because you're talking to an awful lot of us here, and just getting through that, the part about the forgiveness and knowing that you can congratulate yourself, that total turnabout of recognition in the experience, it's like I feel relief. I feel relief knowing it from that perspective. Thank you for offering that to all of us.
Well, I thank you too, and you know, it's just like this is well. All I can say is that it's a hell of a lot better than what I was told back when I was growing up. You know, growing up in that cult, what I am experiencing now is the true high that they were trying to give in some kind of belief that somehow, you know, you're chosen. And I, you know, my whole thing is now that if we understand our own divinity, that's really where what grace is the understanding of our own divinity, and we connect and live our lives from that spiritual place first and view this truly as an experience, and that it's a journey of discovery, then life becomes, no matter what happens, And I'm not saying this lightly, because I know there's very, very difficult things that occur. And this physical body does have its pain, no doubt about it. But no matter what is occurring, you can step back and see it from this larger view and see it as a grand adventure. And it truly is.
Yeah.
And I'll say this too, you become your own greatest source of entertainment.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I'm taking it all in. I'm really feeling that I'm not alone when I say relief. You know, it just kind of opened the door a little wider on some level. And you know, you always want to say, show me what I need to see. And you have these aha moments.
Yeah.
And I am sure I am not alone in having this aha moment. Mm-hmm. Just a deeper awareness somehow. It takes the edge off in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Carlton feels the same way.
Mm. Well, thank you, Kathy. That was, and I'm really, you know, it's perfect that he asked his question. That was really a deep question. And, because who of us haven't gone through some tough times? And, you know, some a lot tougher than others, for sure. No life is without it. And during those times, if we can understand that there's greater purpose, you know, certainly I used to scratch my head and wonder why I had to go through some of the things I went through. But now at age 60, I look back at my life and I go, oh my gosh, there was brilliance in it. Mm-hmm. Every step along the way, it was beautifully orchestrated.
Yeah, and you know, of course, that goes into the many lifetimes and all the people around you are helping you get it done.
Yep.
And vice versa, of course. Well, I know there's one more thing. What was it? I looked at your website to catch up, and you know, this higher knowing course, I'm liking that. I think that that's really unique. You are the creator here, and what did they say? You're a mystic creator.
Yeah, creative mystic, right? Yep, it is a unique course, Higher Guidance Life Coaching. I think that's, you know, the only kind of coaching I want to have is because I want to get it from my own higher guidance.
Yeah.
I don't want a cookie cutter approach that says, okay, here, let's talk about your goals and let's fit you into the success model.
Yeah. I really, really love that you're doing that. And everybody go find Jean Slater online for sure. Well, we are at 20 after the hour and I could talk into the night, as I'm sure many of you feel the same, Jean. But what would you like to, there was one more thing, wasn't there, on your website that you could share with us? And I don't know what it was, but I think I'm missing something.
Well, there is one more thing then I'd like to end with and say, and that is that, I do know. I think I sent Marita, I do have a special package. Is that what you're talking about, Kathy?
You know, I was saying energetically in my heart, we're not finished here. What is it? So thank you. Let's hear all about that.
Okay, yeah, and I don't know where Marita has that posted, but there's a special package that if you want to get more in depth into this, I have three videos. One is Hiring the Heavens and Your Angelic Team, and that really goes into depth all about Hiring the Heavens. And far more stories and far more depth and, you know, really, really goes into it. There's a second video called Break Free of the Law of Attraction. I think you'll really enjoy that. And that goes into how different this is than the law of attraction and why, and goes into the fact that we're really a trinity and how to live from that trinity, why the law of attraction works, and when it doesn't work, and why the law, why hiring the heavens works, and under what law, and when that works. So I think you'll really enjoy that. The third video is Hired by the Heavens. And Hired by the Heavens is, it's a two-way street. Not only can we connect with this expansive resource pool and hire for everything that we want in our lives, but the heavens wants to hire us. And there's something we are uniquely qualified for. So in this video, it goes into understanding your purpose from four different aspects. You'll find out what's on your soul's resume. You'll find out how to negotiate your contract, what your soul's mission is, and what your light is all about. So that's a really great video. It also has a free ebook then for keeping track of your committees, and then a free bonus MP3 on hiring the heavens and your spiritual workforce. Hiring the heavens and your financial workforce. So it's a two-hour MP3 going into specifically working with the heavens for your finances. So that is the package that is available if anybody wants to take a look at that. And again, I'm not sure where Marita posted it, but that is available to anyone listening.
Okay, everybody knows Marita's telephone number, but here it is. It's 317-773-0061. That's how you get to Marita, or Stargate Marita carltonisonline2@gmail.com. You know, we haven't heard about this package. That was her little gift to us when she, if she was going to be here, and here we go with the way things happen. But I'm sure that she is going to give it to all of us next Thursday and to her email group. Anybody on her email, if you want that package, go to her email, stargatemarita@gmail.com, so that she can just forward it to each and every one of us and then give us the goods next week as well. But Jean, this is fabulous, fabulous. I am so connected to you. I'm feeling you, girl.
Thank you, Kathy. It's been a delight, and I really enjoyed our conversation. And I learned some new things with that 2 million-year-old bones that they found. I can't wait to do some research on that.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks.
Yeah,
for
we're all Battlestar Galactic fans.
Yeah. Well, Jean, I'll just say this. You can stay on board. She's on Skype, everybody, with us, and we can see her picture and, you know, IM each other and things like that. Jean, would you do me a favor, please? We have the wrong number for you. And would you just put it in on the board so that I can have that and give it to Marita and my, you know, all the team who wants to have it?
Okay, I did give it to Marita, so she does have my number.
But it's incorrect, Jean. We called you, and it was incorrect.
So
just put it on the board here. You don't have to say it for the audience. Just go ahead and Skype, type it into the IM.
Okay. All right. Will do.
And you're welcome to stay. You do not have to leave if you're interested in any further conversations. We're going to be bringing up Tarim Rahman next. And Tarim Rahman, I'm going to leave that. And thank you. Blessings to you. So appreciate all that wisdom this evening. And Tarim Rahman, do you want to take a musical break, or would you like to just keep going since we only have about 35 minutes to the top of the hour?
I think we should keep going.
Okay, that's what I'm feeling as well. All right.
I'm going to say goodnight. Thank you so much. It was an absolute delight.
A pleasure.
Thank you too, sister, so much. Namaste.
Namaste. Bye-bye. Namaste.
One number off.
Okay, then, Tara, we are going to do a full about face and move right back into the flow of where you have begun this evening. And what is it that you wish to share with everyone?
Okay. I think we were thinking of, and I think it would be just okay to do this, we all miss Wayne Dyer. And Sonia called us up. We were 15 minutes. She was 15 minutes into it, but she called us up, so we got the last minutes. It's not a whole, you know, there's breaks in between, but we cut the breaks out. So we would just like to play this conversation that was had between Wayne Dyer and Oprah Winfrey. And this is probably the last time that any of us have anything of him. The PBS will be putting his teachings up, but he was talking literally about his way of seeing how things are. And since we had such an awesome time, I don't want to lose track. I mean, there's all kinds of hard news. It's never-ending story. But we're at the end of that one, and it is serious now. But let's enjoy that. How's that, everybody? Is that okay with you, Sister? Sister Kathy?
I'm talking and I'm muted, so sorry. Yes, that just sounds about perfect, doesn't it? I really appreciate that. I think we're all looking forward to it.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. So here we go, everyone. We're going to change the furniture.
Body and move on to whatever
exactly.
That next plane mm-hmm. is.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Is that how you see death?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even think there is such a thing as death. I think it's all an illusion.
You're just going to drop this body.
You just take off an old shoe. Yeah. So that who we are is the part of us that is infinite, the part of us that never stops. And this isn't just my thoughts about it. I can't identify with this body. The body I'm in right now, I think it's me. I think it's real. But tomorrow it'll be a different body and another. So it's learning to focus on the inner instead of the outer. All of our sense of what reality is based upon our senses, what our eyes and ears tell us, what the internet tells us, whatever, we think that that's what's real. But all of that, everything that materializes, dematerializes.
So let's talk about the manifestation of your wishes, being able to create using that spark.
Right.
Because I'm going to just be the spark and grow the spark.
That's right.
Just let me be there, Wayne.
I will. I love you no matter. You spark, whatever.
Okay. Let me be just a spark. And how do I then begin to make that spark? Because that was my prayer for myself for my 58th birthday as I sat here in Maui with my girlfriends. And my prayer is to be in the space of God and have the space of God live and breathe through me as I live and breathe through it, and to be in actually what the thread that I get through all of Wishes Fulfilled is that everything that you say, the word alignment is used almost in every sentence.
Staying connected to your source.
That's about being in alignment
staying with
that.
The ocean, always staying with it, not taking the ego, which is separate, you know. The great teacher Vivekananda, who was Paramahansa Yogananda's great teacher, who came over here early part of the 20th century, and his devotees would ask him this question, you know, how do I do this?
Yes.
He said, in the springtime, go out and observe the blossoms on the fruit trees. He said, the blossoms vanish of themselves as the fruit grows. Mm-hmm. So too will the lower self, false self, the ego, vanish as the divine grows within you.
Wow.
So it's like all you have to do is begin to think like God thinks. Now, how does God think?
Let his mind be also in you. That's what Jesus said.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Let his mind be also in you.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like God doesn't want anything, doesn't take anything, doesn't demand anything. It doesn't get petty. You know, I love to quote the poets. I write poetry myself. And Hafiz, the great Hafiz. Yeah, he said, even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Just think what a love like that can do. It lights up the whole world. That's how you do it. It just lights up the whole. All you have to do is give and practice this divine love.
I just had a thought. Your new love in your life.
Yes, she's sitting right over there.
Must really love you, because do you quote poetry all the time to her?
I write her poetry.
You write her poetry?
I wrote her
poetry. Oh, what every woman wants is a man who can write it and then talk it.
Yes.
And more importantly, live it.
Yes.
Coming up, Wayne discusses being diagnosed with leukemia and the controversial treatment he chose.
I know. I was as skeptical as anybody could be about this, you know. And what happened is I got up. Okay,
change the tape because this is going to take some time. What do you mean you had the surgery?
I know. I just did.
More from Maui when Super Soul Sunday Return. I love this, that whenever you're in any given situation, you ask yourself, are you operating from your lower self, your ego, which is edging God out, or are you operating from your higher self?
Right. The lower self is always the self that says, what's in it for me? I want more. It's the mantra. The internal mantra is more, more, more. I'm not getting enough. What can I have? The mantra of the higher self says, how may I serve? How may I serve? And it's really
about...
Or how
can I be used? Yeah, that's my question.
It's really about how... When we were on the way over here, I was telling Mira and three of my children who are also sitting over there that one of the reasons that you're one of the most admired people alive is because you have lived this divine love kind of approach. I mean, your life is about giving. This is what I aspire to, just being able to give. I mean, starting up schools and for me, it's like, and if you're not kind and loving to the cameraman and to the people who clean your toilets when you're staying in a hotel.
That's how you tell how people are.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like taking time to everyone. It's love for everyone.
Guess what? Well, you can't guess. I just came back from India.
I know you did, with my friend Deepak Chopra. He called me just before we left.
Really? Yeah. And I will tell you, I don't know why this happened to me in India and it didn't happen to me driving down Chicago Avenue, but everywhere I turned in India, I swear I saw myself. Mm. I saw myself in the guy on an ox cart. I saw myself as the woman on the side of the road.
You're asking how that happened? This is what happened.
What was that?
This is exactly what happens. Because you begin to realize that all of us are connected. You know, at the highest place, we all came from the same source. We all return to the same source. We're just, all of us are just nothing but individualized expressions of this oneness of God. That's what we all are, you know. And until once we get that, you know, the
name. Have you ever had that experience before? That was kind of weird.
I see myself not only in that. This happened to me. I just had this amazing experience with John of God and this healing and this leukemia.
Wayne Dyer is referring to the controversial Brazilian healer known as John of God. Over the past four decades, John of God says he's treated millions of people. With no medical training and little formal education, John of God performs physical surgeries, seemingly without anesthesia or sterilization.
As the operation began, I thought, I can see the knife. What will happen to me? But it didn't hurt.
John of God says he is a vessel rather than a healer, and that entities, the spirits of deceased doctors, surgeons, and saints, work through him. He and his followers claim the entities have cured people of cancer, helped the blind to see, and the paralyzed to walk again. Many of John of God's healings, however, do not involve any physical contact. You were sick?
I was diagnosed with leukemia.
You won't say you were sick?
I believed I was then. I am perfect health.
Okay.
I am well. I am perfect health.
So you were diagnosed with leukemia.
I was diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia.
Wow.
And for 11 months I believed it, and I lived in fear. Not fear like I'm going to die and poor me and all of that kind of thing. Just sort of a subconscious feeling about, oh my God, how did this happen? And I had this experience with John of God, you did a whole show.
With John of God, who's a healer in Brazil, who is a farmer who does this for no money. And I'm going to go see for myself.
You're going to Abajania?
Yes, I am. So let's finish the story, though.
I had a friend from Bulgaria. Her name is Raina Piskova. She's a medical doctor in California, an eye surgeon. And she flew down there. She wanted me to go with her because she found out I had leukemia.
You had heard of John of God.
I had heard of John of God, but I didn't know that much about him, you know. And I was on the fence about it because there's so many people who
are charlatans.
Yeah. But anyway, she got down there and she called me and she said, take a picture all dressed in white. When you go down there, you only dress in white. Everything is in white. And take a picture from the front, from the back, from the side, and send it down. We did that. She emailed him down there. She took the pictures to John of God. She said, would you do surgery? He said to her, I can't because he's not taking these herbs, these special herbs that you take. So she FedExed, I mean, God bless her. I mean, she went to a FedEx office from down in Brazil, near Brasilia. Things FedExed up to me on a Tuesday.
The herbs.
The herbs. I took the herbs and the special water and did all of the things that I was supposed to do. And we took the pictures again. And she said, your surgery will be, it was on my mother's 95th birthday. So that's why I remember it so much, April 21st. And so I had the surgery. I didn't feel anything. I went to bed. I drank the water. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I woke up the next morning and she called me from Brazil.
What do you mean you had the surgery?
I don't know, Oprah. I just had the surgery.
What do you mean you had the surgery? He's in Brazil and were you here in Maui?
I was in Maui, yeah. Different time zones. I know. I was as skeptical as anybody could be about this, you know. And what happened is I got up. Okay.
Change the tape because this is going to take some time. What do you mean you had the surgery?
I know. I just did.
Coming up, more on the healing Wayne Dyer says changed his life. But this does sound crazy even to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did.
Okay, it did. We'll be right back.
And he picks up these instruments, and you can actually see pictures of the entities that enter his body as he does the surgery. I know. Well, you're going down there. You'll see.
I'm going down.
You did a whole show on it.
I mean, but every time I've heard about him or talked about him or even written about him in the magazine, it has been through somebody else's eyes.
Right.
And I keep hearing these stories and hearing
I had a direct experience. So anyway, so I went to bed. I didn't feel anything. Nothing changed.
After you've taken the herbs.
I took the herbs. She said, you'll wake up the next at 7 o'clock. She told me what time the surgery was at 7 o'clock. She said, you'll get up at 8 o'clock, and then you'll drink some of the water, the blessed water, and you'll go right back to bed for 24 hours.
Let's get to the surgery part.
Okay. Surgery is just, it's a remote surgery. I mean, it was 12,000 miles from where I was. So it's, I don't know what happened. These are entities. They don't have any form. They're just these spirits that enter his body. It's been going on for 40 years to 25 million
people. Okay, so tell me this. Does he tell you a certain time to lay down, a certain way to lay down?
No, just go to bed, wear white, just wear everything is white. Well, drink the water, take the herbs, and don't have sex, and don't eat pork. But basically, that's it. Okay, so I did everything. I went to bed. I got up.
Were you skeptical as I am right now?
Yes.
Because this sounds crazy.
I know. It was, but that's because we have been conditioned to believe that.
Yes. This is my limited self talking. Okay.
But here's a line from Jesus. You know, with God.
Yes.
All things are possible. Now, what does that leave out?
That leaves out nothing.
Okay, that leaves out nothing. So it doesn't leave out this either. It leaves out nothing. That's what all things means. If he meant some things are possible and some things aren't, he would have said that, you know, but he didn't. He said all things are possible.
But this does sound crazy, even to you, doesn't it?
It did.
Okay, it did. Okay.
But I had leukemia.
Okay, so when you have leukemia.
My white blood count was going up, and I had cancer in my blood, and I was, you know. So,
yes.
So Rina called me, and she said, go right back to bed. I said, I can't go back to bed. I just slept for 8 hours. She said, you've had surgery. It's no different than having your gallbladder removed or something. She said, you've got to go right back to bed.
How did you feel when you woke up?
I felt fine. I didn't feel any different, honestly. And I said to my kids, I'm going for a walk. You know, it's like I walk about an hour and a half every day. I kind of brisk walk and all of this. And then I got about 100 yards away, and I collapsed. I mean, I couldn't get up. I was basically helpless. And I had to almost crawl back into the apartment to get on the elevator. I was out of breath. I said to my daughter and my son, both of whom were there at the time that this happened, and they said, I said, I've just got to go back to bed. I said, I just feel so weak. I don't know what has happened. I have no idea. And I went back to bed until 8 o'clock the next morning. Wow. 24 hours. I slept. I got up twice to go to the bathroom and to have a little bit of soup, and I went back to bed. Now, that's not the weird part.
That wasn't the weird part. Well, do tell the weird part.
Well, the weird part is a week, you know, so a week went by, and I was getting, you know, weaker, and just, you know, and I kept thinking, aren't I going to be able to exercise anymore? I can't swim anymore. I would look at the ocean. Now, I swim every day, long distances. I couldn't even imagine getting to the beach. It looked so far away. And, like, I would need help with it. Like, I was almost like a cripple. So they said, on the following Thursday, on the 28th, the sutures will be removed. And
sutures?
I said, I've got news for you. I don't have any sutures. And she said, that's what it's called. Now, when you have leukemia, they don't have sutures. It's in the blood. You know, it's like you do, you know, bone marrow things, but you don't. And they said, you'll go back, and this is where the most important thing that you will do. You take the herbs until the week, and you'll go to bed at 10 o'clock at night on the 28th of April.
Yeah.
A week later, 7 days later. And when you wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, you will have had the sutures removed, and you'll be on your way to the healing. And these are the kind of things that you have.
Now, what are you thinking when you're hearing this? Are you thinking what I'm thinking right now? Cucamata.
No, not Cucamata.
Not Cucamata.
No, because I'm at the pay. I'm a little older than you, Oprah, and I'm open to everything, and I really believe that. With
I'm
God,
open,
all
but
are
it
possible.
Sounds the sutures part sounds a little.
I know it did. It did to me too, and there are no sutures. So, but that's just what they call what happens when these entities re-enter your body and do whatever it is that they do.
So you're just going along with it, and you're saying, whatever, I have leukemia, so if it works, it works.
I went to bed. I got up the next morning.
Yeah.
I walked out. My daughter looked at my eye. She said, what happened to your eye? She said, your eye's been scraped, your right eye. There was all kinds of, like, goopy stuff in my right eye. Like, someone had actually gone in, which you'll see when you go down there. That's what they do. They do this kind of scraping of the eye. Then my son looked at me. He said, what were you doing back in their bedroom there? He said, you don't have any pupils. Were you doing drugs back there? I said, no, I just got up. I said, but I have never felt, I've never felt so loving in my life before. I said, and I looked at my daughter, I said, you just look so beautiful. I put my arms around her. I said to my son, oh my God, I just love you so much. Everything changed, Oprah. He took whatever they did that night when they were in that room changing my life around. They took the fear out. Everything that is fear cannot be love. Everything that is love cannot be fear. And my birthday, my 71st birthday, was just a few days later. I was in San Francisco. And all I wanted to, it was the most memorable birthday I've ever had. I had a big wad of $50 bills and I went downstairs at the bank and got. And all I did all day long was go to homeless people all over Union Square, right there in downtown San Francisco, and talk to people who were taking, you know, plastic bottles out of rubbish and so on, and telling them their name, putting my arm around them, and putting $50 in their hands or $100 in their hands. And I did it all day long until 4 o'clock the afternoon. I gave away several thousand dollars, and I walked back into my bedroom and I cried. I mean, I was sobbing.
What happened to you? What was that?
They put divine love into me. Somehow, I just feel like I've been in this kind of training since I was a young boy to learn what it is to really live divine love. And it's everything that has happened in my life. Mira, this woman who came into my life shortly after that, we just have had this most loving, divine, you know, amazing experience as two people. Never ever felt like at 71. It's just the most beautiful experience. I've never had anything, but not just there. Everywhere I go, everyone that I see, it's like I put my arms around people now. I send people love. I call people who are in hospitals. I go visit them. I'm giving everything that I have away. It's just been such a dramatic experience.
Coming up, does wishes fulfill work for stuff, for things? Yeah. I want a new house. I want a car. I want a boyfriend. I want a husband. I want the love of my life. I want to be happy. Does it work for that?
More with Wayne Dyer when we come back. Wayne Dyer's latest book, his 37th, is called Wishes Fulfilled. It's all about the art of manifestation, using your imagination to help make your future dream a present fact. Wayne believes your greatest power resides in the way you use two simple words, I am, instead of saying things like, I am sad, I am sick, or I am unlovable. Wayne suggests to focus on what you wish to be true by saying things like, I am happiness, I am health, I am love. It's a technique he believes has helped him immensely with his leukemia.
Tell me this. When did you know the leukemia was gone?
You know, I was still writing Wishes Fulfilled at that time.
Yes.
And I began to listen to the reading that I was doing on it, on the I Am Discourses. And what it said in there is, always use the name I am is the name of God. It's the name that God said to Moses. I am that I am. And he said, and that shall be my name for all future generations. So that's my name. So every time you use the name I am, you're really using the name of God. So if you say I am weak, you know, and in the book again of the Bible and the book of Joel, it says, let the weak man say, I am strong. So you have to call things that do not exist as if they did. That's, again, that's out of the book of Job. So you have to get yourself to a place where you're willing to say, I am perfect health, I am well. I now start all of my lectures with I am well, I am perfect health. And I don't go back and check my white blood counts.
You say this on page 174. I've not partaken of new blood tests and medical evaluations because I trust in what I experience to such a degree that I need no external validation to assure me that these mysterious mystical events took place. I was there for the surgery and I was there for the suture removal. I need say nothing more.
Right.
And so you now don't do the blood test.
I don't do the blood tests. I don't. The oncologist that I was working with agrees with me. He said, just go by how you
feel. What you don't want is to be indoctrinated by somebody else's idea of what your health is.
That's one of the most important things. Like the wishes filled foundations that this book is based upon are place into your imagination. Self-actualized people. I learned from Abraham Maslow when I was a young doctoral student. You never put into your imagination anything that you do not want to materialize into your life. And that's just what my mission is. It's just to teach people that you are love. You are divine. Mm-hmm. Put that into your imagination. I am well. I am happy. I am content. I am fulfilled. Even if your senses tell you that you're depressed. One of your people that called me when we did a pre-interview on here said, well, if I'm feeling depressed, I'm supposed to fool myself and say I am feeling well, even
you
if I'm depressed?
You can't choose another thought. That's what I've learned.
Absolutely. And it's like you don't say I am depressed, because if you say I am depressed, you connect with depression. And the universal source, God, whatever you want to call it, will align in such a way to offer you whatever it is.
More depression.
Here's some more depression. I am unhappy. I am depressed. I am. So by placing into your imagination what you want and assuming the feeling of that wish is already fulfilled, you go through your life feeling that. When enough of us do that, we will transform this planet. I'm telling you, it can be done.
We're doing it right now.
Absolutely. Us sitting here right here together. It's all part of this perfection.
Does wishes fulfilled work for stuff? For things, yeah. I want a new house, I want a car, I want a boyfriend, I want a husband, I want the love of my life, I want to be happy. Does it work for that?
Not if you say it that way.
Okay.
Not if you say I want to be, because saying I want to be, it means I already am not it. What I'm asking you to say is to put into your imagination what it is that you intend to manifest and act as if it already were
happening.
As it says in the Bible, you know, it's like, call, and he calls those things which do not exist as though they did. As though they did. That's what you have to do.
So don't allow anything in your imagination or your consciousness that you really don't want.
That's what self-actualizing people, they never do that. One of my favorite poets was William Blake. You know, you've heard this, I'm sure. To see the world in a grain of sand.
In a grain of sand.
And a heaven in a wildflower.
Yes.
To hold eternity in your palm of your hand. And infinity in an hour, we are all led to believe a lie when we see with, not through the eye, which was born in a night to perish in a night, while the soul slept in beams of light. You know, the soul, that's who we are. And the soul is infinite, so all it wants to do is expand. It doesn't want to be fenced in. It can't stand it when somebody tries to control it or tell it what to do or how it should be.
Coming up, what you really are saying in this book is get yourself right with God. Are you not saying that? We'll be right back.
Only here.
You know, when I finished reading Wishes Fulfilled, I thought that in summary, what you really were saying, and this is my quest for myself and for, you know, my next chapter in life is to move closer to home, move closer to God, to live a more self-actualized life. But what you really are saying in this book is get yourself right with God. Mm. Are you not saying that?
I am. I'm saying, stay connected and recognize.
Get connected to that.
And recognize that when you're connected to the ocean, you have all the power of the ocean.
Yes.
It's like it's only when you separate yourself from the ocean that you wither away, change form, and return to your source, which is what all of us are doing. We're going to change form and return to our source. It's just a great metaphor. So it's really understanding that the highest self, the highest place within you, is this divinity that is not just a spark. There's a great teacher in India. His name was Patanjali, and it goes way back 2,300 years ago. He said, when you are steadfast... Steadfast means you never slip, okay? When you're steadfast in your abstention of thoughts of harm directed towards yourself and others, that all living creatures will cease to feel fear in your presence. That's Christ consciousness. That's Buddha awareness.
You know, say it again. When you are steadfast.
When you are steadfast in your abstention of thoughts of harm directed towards yourself and others, that all living creatures will cease to feel fear in your presence. That's what St. Francis was. I mean, that's like the animals will just, the birds will land on you. And so there are some people who walk into a room and everybody in the room just feels better. You've been around people like that.
Yes.
My teachers have all come from that place. Nisargadatta Maharaj, who wrote I Am That, one of his great covers. And it's just really, he's called the teacher of the I Ams. I've been calling him my teacher. I've never even met the man. He died in the 1980s. I was just like a devotee of his. I was reading everything and involved with his teachings in India. And all he was teaching us is that you just have an I Am presence. But you have to honor that.
You have to
pay homage to it. You have to be in a state of gratitude for it.
You've used many quotes here. Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, my favorite quote is from Pierre Teilhard of Chardin, the great French priest. And basically, he said that we are not here as human beings having a spiritual experience. It's the other way around, that we're all infinite spiritual beings having a temporary human experience. And just find that place within you.
Thank you.
Thank you, my love.
Thank you.
So good to see you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a wish fulfilled to be sitting with you.
You were about 24 years old, I think, 22 years.
I was 22.
22 years old.
That's a long time.
So beautiful, yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah, we used to have so much fun doing those
things. We still are.
I know.
It's only natural that in this week's Breathing Space, we spend a few more moments on the peaceful island of Maui. It's a place both Wayne Dyer and I feel a strong connection to. The ancient beauty of this island does something for your soul. From the lava rock lining the shores of Kapalua to the bamboo forests of Haiku, transports you to a different state of being. Isn't it true that when you're surrounded by beauty, the beauty inside you seems to glow a little brighter? So today, take a few moments. Somewhere beautiful to be. I hope it could be by a waterfall. Or maybe it's just down the street. And ask yourself these questions. How can you live more gracefully?
That was precious, everyone. I hope that was enjoyable. And as we all glean the vibration that we can connect, like with what our dear sister Jean was saying and what Wayne was saying, the language slightly a little different, yet it's really touching that same part of ourselves. And we are that oneness. They both had that one in common. And the power of learning these things accesses these higher frequencies. So this sixth to ninth dimension that we're being asked to walk into right now, that's the point. And Patty Kohler-Robles was saying it too, just a very short little bit of hers. I'll just read a first paragraph. She said, "I am sending out this very important information, September 8th, because it is that day that is celebrated in the outer world as Mother Mary's birthday." It was indeed Mother Mary's birthday. And this powerful representative of the divine feminine and the universal keeper of the flame, of the immaculate concept, excuse me, is working in union with Saint Germain, who is the universal keeper of the violet flame, of God's infinite perfection. Together they have had victoriously fulfilled, they have God victoriously fulfilled, a facet of the divine plan, and they initiated on behalf of all humanity and every particle of life evolving on this planet during this initial impulse of our fall from grace. The success of their divine mission has catapulted humanity and the earth into frequencies of vibration that will allow us to tangibly experience one of the most critical facets of our ascension process. We are in the midst of this amazing event that every moment
Our conscious awareness of the opportunity at hand will allow us to participate in ways that will transform our lives forever. So be it. This is so true. And let me just open a page here, see what our unicorn message is tonight. And by the way, Michael Dorn was talking about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. There's a second book. This is called Unicorns I Have Known by Robert Vavra. The second book is Unicorns of Kilimanjaro. And I don't think he knew about that just then, but that's a fact. Okay. This is a little something. It says, without a doubt, the rarest photograph in this book is this one. During half a century of observation, Rudolf Springer never saw more than three unicorns together. It is extremely unusual to sight. It is extremely unusual to sight more than a single animal at one time. This photograph of a band of unicorn stags and does pose of their meeting remains unknown. Was taken on a high red plateau in Egypt. The purpose of their, sorry, but I have to readjust myself here. The purpose of their meeting remains unknown. Something through, I'm having trouble reading this. Don't know what's going on. Let me see here. Hold on, everybody. The purpose of their meeting remains unknown. Sleuthing through dozens of museums, libraries, churches, and private collections, I viewed literally hundreds of engravings, woodcuts, sculptures, paintings, mosaics, cast metal figures, and tapestries. And among these, I discovered only five works in which three or more unicorns were depicted. Shortly before journeying from Spain to England to meet Veronica Tudor Williams, I had visited the Prado Museum in Madrid almost every Sunday. There, apart from the Goya etchings, the work I found most fascinating was the Hieronymus Bosch, 1450 to 1516 altar painting, in which a number of strange unicorn-like animals appear. Number two, Ladies and Unicorns, a painting by Gustave Moreau, 1826 to 1898, contains three unicorns and is found in Paris in the Musée Gustave Moreau. Number three, in the City of Antwerp Gallery of copper plate engravings, I found a graphic by J. Collard, 1545 to 1622. After J. van der Straat, 1523 to 1605, titled Unicorn Hunt in India, in which four unicorns with solid hooves are depicted. Four, in an engraving by Samuel Boschart, dated 1663, London, five unicorns appear. The most famous work by the American painter Arthur B. Davies is a 1906 canvas entitled Unicorns, which, except for the incorporation of two human figures, is one of my favorite pieces of unicorn art. Obviously, Arthur B. Davies has seen the unicorn proper, a conclusion with which the reader will agree as he or she visits the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art, where this painting hangs, and compares its animals to those on pages 50 and 51, which are all real unicorns. It occurs to me that
certain honorable men, such as Davies, added fantasy, in this case two women, to their renditions of a beast that had actually they had actually observed, motivated by the noble desire not to betray the true unicorn by revealing his existence in what would be widely viewed works of art. Okay, it's 3 minutes after now. It's time for the music maestro, but we'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This was a very magical evening. Serendipity is with us. See you in your dreams. Namaste for now. Music maestro.